Begin transmission. Hello, everybody. It is Chris, Milton, and Ben. Yep, we got the full crew here united again for episode 148 of Outer Rim Transmission. Two major topics on the headlines for tonight. We have, of course, another review for The Bad Patch Season 3. This time we're looking at episode 12, Juggernaut. And we're also going to be breaking down the brand new story trailer for the next Star Wars video game, Star Wars Outlaws. All that on this week's episode. But first and foremost, let's get into it. Milton, it's been a while. You've been kind of all over the place. You're going to some big wrestling events and whatnot. So fill us in, man. How you been?
I'm good. I'm you're right. I've been busy, you know, with Easter prior to that, WrestleMania, just other family things going on. But yeah, it was dope. I was at WrestleMania 40 in Philadelphia. That was an experience that I've always wanted to do ever since I was a kid. As I was telling you guys prior to the podcast, probably talking wrestling or my love for wrestling and Star Wars are probably 1A, 1B. Probably wrestling a lot of times have been number 1A to me just because of the imagination that comes with it. You know, the superhero aspect and just the overall storytelling, how there really isn't an off season of it. So, like, It goes round year round, and there's so many things that my personality has been developed because of wrestling. So, yeah, me and four or five other guys that I'm close with, we went to WrestleMania 40. My friend John and Dustin, they actually went to WrestleMania 39 in Los Angeles last year, so they kind of had us beat on it, and they kind of walked us through what that experience would be like. So it was cool. It was cool to see legends that I grew up watching as, you know, a 10-year-old kid. Obviously current stars that I really enjoy right now, and both nights was worth it. I mean, I know night one was cold, but I treated it as like a football game. You know, I was prepared for it. It was awesome. People were tailgating, having a good time. I will say, you know, we talk about Star Wars Celebration as this is a Star Wars podcast. You know, there's a lot of similarities to these type of events like Star Wars Celebration or WrestleMania, where it's a big party. It's a big convention to celebrate the industry, whether it's professional wrestling itself or WWE as a brand. Just like with Star Wars Celebration, that you're there to celebrate not only, you know, the fans and, you know, the Star Wars product, but you celebrate, you know, creativity, you celebrate, you know, fandom, you celebrate this being something that brings people together, and it's a party. So yeah, it was so fun. I enjoyed it. It's something I will definitely experience again in my life, probably not anytime soon, but probably in the next couple years when I, you know, am able to figure out the next one that's close in our local area or even on the East Coast in general.
Well, Milton, one of the best parts about the whole WrestleMania weekend, I saw there's a reporter for NFL Network named Kyle Brandt. He was there and he posted a video and I was like, oh yeah, that's exactly like I thought of like kind of the Star Wars Celebration comparison along those lines, because Kyle Brandt posted like a selfie video. He was there and he was like, hey, this is like once in a lifetime experience. You know, all of us are fans here. It doesn't matter any of our backgrounds or anything. We're all just WWE fans tonight, blah, 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 you know? And it's like, that's what I thought of when you see like Star Wars Celebration, like, you know, it made me think of like Star Wars fans, because online fans are like so hostile against each other sometimes, but then at Celebration, everybody puts their pitchforks down and everybody's like buddy, buddy and stuff. And it's just like, you know, that's what you saw with WWE. Like, you know, people just like having such a great time, and it was awesome, like seeing your experience as well as like so many other people's as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I will definitely take. I mean, you're right. I think the biggest thing there is the camaraderie of fans, and you know, I mean, the people complimenting your shirts, the people complimenting your belt. You know, hell, people compliment your sneakers. A lot of wrestling fans like Jordans and LeBrons and Kobe's, and I mean, people, hey, nice sneakers, bro, or nice hat, man. Like, it's just cool that everyone's like there to appreciate each other. And the biggest thing I can take away too is that, you know, again, I'm 36 and love wrestling. You know, I couldn't imagine if I was 10 years old going to something like this, because I made the point to one of my buddies and said, imagine, you know, you see these kids here and like imagine what they're going through right now, because it's very family friendly too. But imagine a 10-year-old kid, girl or boy, going to WrestleMania for the first time and saying, oh my God, this is why I love wrestling, you know, and they got to experience it at that age. So it's just super cool to see that and just know, like, hey, this is not just for grown adults, it's for kids, too.
Oh, yeah. So real quick, I know this is mainly a Star Wars podcast, but at least we'll talk a little bit. Not a whole lot going on this week, but no, there actually is two big things. But what was your favorite moment? What was their favorite moment of the whole thing?
I would just say just seeing like the whole environment. Honestly, it was soaking it in. So, like my biggest takeaway when I first got there, I told my friends, I was like, listen, this isn't real until I walk into the stadium and see the stage and see like the canopy set up. And so you'll see in some of my pictures on social media, like we were able to walk in, because I've been to Lincoln Financial plenty of times. Like I'm a huge Eagles fan, so I've been to that stadium multiple times for Eagles games. But to see it built for a wrestling capacity, when I walked in and I did an Instagram live, I said, oh, we're in here. And we walked into the stadium with the actual setup of WrestleMania 40. I was like, oh, this is real now. That was like the biggest thing for me night one, because I was like, okay, I'm now can touch it. I can feel it. I can see it. And if you look through some of my pictures, you can see that we were able to get close to the stage and take a picture of your 40 logo with like me and my friends.
Yeah. I mean, I could equate, like you mentioned Celebration. I'm looking back this week. Like I was literally there a year ago in London going nuts with the rest of them. But yeah, I remember exactly what you were saying about the ring. The first Celebration I went to in Chicago was the one I won't ever forget, obviously, because it was the first one. But yeah, I remember walking out to the expo hall and just seeing like the TIE fighters and the X-Wings parked around. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm here. I have that realization that after all these years, I'm finally where I wanted to be. You know, it's important. It's important to dive into fandom, Ben. You're the only one left here that hasn't done one of their dream convention-esque events. We got to get you out to one of these sorts of things one of these years, man.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we're talking about maybe looking into SummerSlam this year for wrestling, now that apparently I'm a partial wrestling fan, at least after last weekend, because it's at the Brown Stadium, which is my favorite team, and I've been there plenty of times. Like you said, Milton, it's so cool just like seeing an event like that put on in your favorite stadium. And then... other than that, I mean, we've looked into also maybe depending on who comes to Detroit Comic Con this year, I'm going to see if like the Arrow cast comes back because the entire Arrow crew usually comes every year or two, where it's like Stephen Amell, the girl that plays Felicity, and the guy that plays Diggle, usually like the original, the OG three, come there every year. So if they like just to kick off their comic convention season, so... if they do that again, we're looking into doing that because, like, you know, it'd be so cool to meet some of my favorite, like, stars from TV like that even. And then, you know, Detroit Comic Con, they had plenty of Star Wars actors. Like, last year, they had John Carlos there. They had, I think, the girl that plays the armor was there. Yeah. And then they had the girl that plays Sabine from the animated, from Rebels animated, the voice actors.
Yep,
she was there. And then there were, you know, just a couple other people like that there. So, you know, even just up in Detroit, like, that's only an hour and a half away. You know, they have Star Wars actors there, too. So, like, we're going to look into that this year as well because, you know, those events are usually in June. So that'd be a great time right around the Acolyte as well.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, you know, one of my dreams is to, you know, we've talked about this. I do want to attend a Star Wars Celebration. You know, but my, like my thing is though, they're just so far half the time, and I'm just like, I'm not trying to. Well, obviously, like I mean, I already told myself, you know, if it's something that's on the East Coast where it's feasible and it's doable, absolutely, I'll make a point to get there. Like, I still need to do, you know, a Comic Con, whether it's New York Comic Con or San Diego or something. It's just the logistics, it's just the right timing, and obviously with WrestleMania, this was the perfect timing, you know, because it was in my home state. It's literally 2 hours from where I live, 2 hours and what, some change. And the thing is, though, we went with a group of guys that made it so financially easy to do. So it wasn't you spending all the money. You had guys that we rented a car for $80 for like 4 days, you know, awesome. You know, it's just being smart about it. So I think that's where I'd have to figure out my next, you know, checklist of like, okay, when am I going to go do this? How am I going to do it logistically? So yeah, it'll happen. It'll just be when I'm ready to do it, you know?
Yeah. It's just, you know, we keep saying, bring it to East Coast, Darn it. That doesn't count. I mean, yeah, technically Florida is the East Coast, but like Northeast, Boston Convention Center, Philadelphia Convention Center, Pennsylvania Convention Center, or Javits Center.
Right.
It's three big places right there that you can easily hold all those people.
Well, and like I said, even if it's in like, you know, like, look, Orlando is still doable. Because like I said, that's there's an airport near my house that's 30 minutes away. I can get me there easily, no problem.
Yeah.
But the Northeast is a region where, honestly, God, wrestling is so huge in the Northeast, which I'm not shocked that they sold out both nights.
Whoa, you know, sold the place out?
73,000 people.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what I'm saying. Because WWE's the main hub out of New York. So it's like Star Wars can make that work in the Northeast. You got Boston, you got New York, you got New Jersey, you got Philadelphia.
Lucas Oil in Indianapolis would be great for it.
My one friend Chad, he just recently went to Indianapolis for like a dirt bike thing or something. He said that place was gorgeous. He's like, downtown was gorgeous. I'm willing to travel that far if I had to go to something like that, depending on the logistics, just because I know like that's still within that region. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah. Well,
I wish Star Wars or Disney itself would now say, okay, let's focus on really being more domestic about these conventions. Yes, we can go to Japan. We got international. We got that. But hey, there's people in Pennsylvania or New York or Boston or New England want to come to these things too.
Well, look at Ohio. It's central every year. I mean, I know with you, Milton, you follow fitness stuff a lot. They host the Arnold down in Columbus every year. And there's 30,000, 40,000 people that show up to that. So like, you know, there's a big convention center down there. So like, there's plenty of places across this, like, you know, northern part of the country for like a Star Wars celebration to come to be at. And hopefully we get that someday, because that would be great to have one up our way, whether it be Ohio, New York, New Jersey, Philly, wherever. I mean, who knows? Maybe they see how the stuff went with WrestleMania, and they're like, "Hey, let's try Star Wars Celebration in Philly."
Yeah, there you go. So nice little recap of what happened over there, and I'm sure you'll be talking about that for years to come. And it's a good thing you got a lot of video, because it is fun looking back.
For sure.
Yeah, so getting into some housekeeping, we go live usually every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. The last month we were kind of going a little on unscheduled territory. My schedule is kind of crazy for the most part, Easter and all that stuff. But we're going to try to resume this timetable as best we can. So 7 p.m. Eastern, but remember, you could always watch us after the fact on this very YouTube channel, youtube.com/StarRaptor, because if you aren't watching us, then you're probably listening into us. And if you want to listen to us, not on YouTube, just search Outer Rim Transmission on any of your podcast streaming services of choice. We had some releases this week. Thrawn Alliances number 4, The High Republic Phase 3 number 6, Darth Vader issue number 45. All those comics have been discussed on my channel and also on the Star Wars Underworld YouTube channel. Me and Matthew Neugerbauer every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern over there on his show, The Tractor Beam. That's where we do our deep dives on the week's releases. But the big thing that came out this week, this is the big one. I've been waiting for this one for a while. And that was The Living Force by John Jackson Miller. First of all, beautiful cover. One of the best covers I've seen in like years. I just love the Drew Struzan, I think, influence of this cover, like the movie poster-esque quality. And yeah, as you see, it's all about the 12 Jedi High Council members during Phantom Menace, or actually just a year before that. So it's basically all them going on a road trip. Chaos ensues. There's pirates. And there's a lot of mundane things that Jedi help people with, which is what they're meant to be doing, not as generals or warriors in a Clone Wars. So it's really cool to see that side of Star Wars, see that time era right before we even get a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot, but a decent amount from Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan as well, right before we see him in Phantom Menace. So definitely, I highly recommend it. I have my review on the channel right here. You could check that out. But our big thing we're going to get into is the Bad Batch. And I just want to get some info from Milton over there. I know you've been watching, but we haven't actually heard a reaction. So how are you feeling so far this season up to this episode?
I'm actually feeling pretty solid. So like this morning, actually, I've watched from the episode 9 to 12, Harbinger until Juggernaut. So I watched those this morning, actually.
Nice. Really fresh.
Yeah, so I'm very fresh. Now, I knew about Harbinger with what's your name showing up in that episode? Saz Ventures. Because my brother has been actually like blowing me up like every week about that. So he's saying, he's like, no, and it's been good though. This is where I think the show's done a good job. He's saying, Milton, he's like, this season's actually really, really good. It not really been a bad episode. He's like, the animation is awesome. He's like, it looks so good. Now there's some words that I can't say on the podcast, but like, I mean, that are good things that he's saying, but you know, they're more explicit. I can't say them, but it's saying that the show's been really, really good this season. And I agree with him, you know, so watching these four episodes, I mean, there's some ups and downs of pacing. I will say that kind of got me. However, because I watched them within, I guess, an hour and a half, it worked. You know, it worked because it was just a singular storyline and it felt consistent. It didn't feel like, oh, I was going from, you know, a storyline here to a storyline there. And it's like, okay, it was all consistent. I've been saying that for a while. Don't deviate from the story. Just keep this narrative focused. And they have been. And I'm loving what I've been seeing. I love what I saw this morning. I'm curious to see how this is going to end. Because, like, obviously we know the end game with, you know, what Palpatine's goal is with this show or with this project. But I'm curious to see what's going to happen to these characters. And would this lead into another animated series? So far I've been pleased with what I've been seeing.
Yeah, I will say they are definitely making a beeline for the ending of the show in a ways we haven't seen maybe any animated series making this concise and calculated of episodes. I mean, you look at Rebels, you look at Resistance, you look at even the Clone Wars, but this entire season has been steadily working towards the end game. My only critique of the season so far is it does feel like it's almost too much buildup and not enough payoff. I'm almost more worried for the finale at this point because we have three episodes left and there's been so much buildup. Now, unless these last three episodes are like a little longer than they usually are, I'm kind of worried that we're going to be left kind of going, oh, wait, there should have been more closure. But, you know, that could be a discussion we could have after we see the end of the show. But that's my only critique, I would say, so far.
Oh, yeah. Well, the good thing, too, to bring up with your point, Milton, that you raised, since you watched the episodes back to back to back, it's nice to know, because like with me and Chris and a lot of people more than likely are just watching them week to week to week. So it's good that like from your initial thoughts there that the episodes flowed pretty well together, watching them as a batch versus just watching them, you know, as one-offs. Mm. So that's good to hear.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, that's why my plan was to do that today. And I'm glad I did. You know, I think that hopefully these next three episodes, like Chris said, we do get payoff. Because I do agree with that part, Chris. I think now we need to see, okay, where's the payoff? Where is this now going to take it? Because what can you do with three episodes? You can't drag it out any further. Like, something has to happen.
Yeah. And, well, with that being said, let's just jump on into episode 12, Juggernaut. This is literally the episode title that is the most literal for what is happening. I've seen this episode title when they released the list. We've seen a trailer with a juggernaut. I said, that whole episode is going to be about that little specific thing from the trailer. And yes, it was. So it's basically the crux of the episode was something I don't think any of us could have guessed. They are literally going to a planet to get Admiral Rampart broken out of a prison, an Imperial prison, to then get information from him to figure out how to get to Exegol. Right. And then at the same time, we're having Omega being shepherded around Tantus by Hemlock. And he's giving her information, intel, and showing her where she will ultimately be imprisoned with the rest of the Force sensitive kids. So I'll throw it over to you, Ben. What was your initial thoughts on this episode?
I mean, first of all, just to throw out there for anyone that may have kind of got confused right there. You accidentally said Exegol instead of Tantus. But anyways, like the episode overall was really good. Like I thought it was good for, well, okay. So it was good in a way where I would say, you know, it's not on par to like some of the other like super high-end episodes for this season, like Harbinger or things like that. But I think it was a good episode, like in a sense where, like, of course you have some of the stuff going on with the normal Bad Batch crew. But I think the Omega stuff was so interesting with the episode. It really carried it for the most part, because, you know, you're getting more of that storyline and more of that almost feel from the first episode of the season, where it's like, okay, we're getting more of a feel of what's going on. Like we're really, you know, making a direct line to like the end of this season. So it just really, I think this episode more than anything is more of like a stepping stone episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a filler, because filler doesn't contribute to stories. It's just it's more of a stepping stone episode to me, because yep. you have Omega, you know, learning more about all like what's going on, what the plans are. Then you have the Bad Batch getting like the info about where she is, or getting some sort of help from Rampart. So like overall, I think it's a good stepping stone episode to an extent, where it's just like, it's getting us, putting the characters in the right places where they need to be, leading into these final three. I think that's the big thing for me, overarching thing for me with this episode. It's just like putting everybody where they need to be. Like, so it's not like it's like, you know, Omega is flying to Tantus this episode. Like, she's there. Like, so you know, characters are where they need to be, basically.
Yeah, I really do agree with your wording of it, like a stepping stone. This felt like, you know, even going into this episode, I knew this was not going to be like the last two episodes we got, right? It's like, okay, we're going from point A to point B. This is how we get there. There's still a lot of to be entertained. This was an entertaining episode. It was a very entertaining episode, in that it felt to me that my first reaction to this episode was, this is a Rebels feeling episode, right? We always go into Star Wars Rebels, you got these high octane missions going around, you're trying to break out Wookiees off of Kessel, you're trying to go to the Mining Guild and do this thing with the Purgil or something. It was just, it gave me those vibes of, hey, we're in a high action sequence here. Oh, there's Milton. Great. We can see you now. But yeah, I mean, I was
right.
There we go. We got him. So yeah, I'll throw it over to you, Milton, since it looks like you're good to go there. What was your initial thoughts on this episode, man?
Yeah, sorry about that mix-up, fellas. Trying to switch over from my phone to my computer. It's finally working. All right. This episode, I really enjoyed this episode. I thought this was a solid episode. This really made me hate the Empire even more.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, one, I know this was about the rescue of Rampart, because he can get them to Tantus, which I enjoy that whole heist. But obviously, how, you know, the Empire just stealing kids, which we shouldn't be shocked, because we've heard about this before in other movies and parts of Star Wars. But it's just how they do it. This particular way they've been doing it in these last two episodes, and how they really talked about it, it's just, it made me hate the Empire even more. And because, let's be real here, I feel like this particular show, and correct me if I'm wrong here, this show has not glorified the Empire, but not really made them a bad guy per se, the first two seasons. Yes, they're not great, but I feel like this season they made the Empire evil, finally.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, these SOBs are not cool. They're not good. Because now you're seeing the perspective of people that were former Separatist soldiers who are now, like, on their own. Now you got the Bad Batch who got, you know, obviously were turned on, whatever. And then you got, you know, obviously Rampart, who's like, hey, I'll help you, but, you know, you got to now look out for me, too. Because he now has a grudge against the Empire. And so you go back to that great scene of last season when Palpatine rose up, and how Rampart, you know, gave his whatever and said, oh, I was following orders, you know. And obviously following orders gets you consequences, obviously, when it comes to the Empire. You know, so it's like, this is full circle. Because look at Crosshair, you know, good soldiers follow orders. He even said, you know, reason why I didn't become like that assassin was because, you know, they couldn't turn me because I wouldn't follow orders. I wouldn't, you know, whatever. And it's like, well,
the Empire really isn't good. And I think this whole episode kind of, to me, became full circle in the sense of, okay, like, the Empire is fully evil and they're just not good people. So I love how this played out.
Oh, yeah. You go back to one of those other episodes with Pabu when Omega gets taken. I guess it was the last episode. And you see how the Empire is just, like, torching the entire place. They don't care. Even though doing that has nothing to do with getting Omega out, they're just doing this for the hell of it. And it's quite interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And that's what I'm about to say. I'll bring that point up, too, because Omega, if she didn't come out, they would have burned that place to the ground. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me of The Force Awakens whenever they were looking for Poe in the first scene. And then, obviously, they captured him, but then they wound up executing that whole, no spoilers, they executed the whole, like, village still. And even in this, I kind of got that sense that they would have done it, or they had, there's still potential for them to still do something like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, I mean, here we go again. This is the Andor feeling. You get the Andor feeling of the Empire is, oh my gosh, yeah, don't like these guys. These guys are really evil, right? They're electrocuting prisoners that step on a floor with their bare feet kind of thing. They're destroying villages and everything else with these people's way of life. Like, I really like how Lucasfilm has really been hammering that out. You know, some of us like the Empire because of visuals and order, but when it comes down to it, no, these, you're supposed to not be on their side, and I think they've been doing a great job as of late explaining about that. What I also like about this is, what, a year or so into the new age of the Empire, something like that? I don't know if we have an exact timetable, but the fact that we're already getting so many people, like, either escaping from the Empire or defecting from the Empire. You look at Rogue One, a lot of those rebel lieutenants are actual prior Imperial people. I think Dodonna used to be an Imperial, maybe. I know in Return of the Jedi, we're getting a current Star Wars comic, Crix Nadine, he was an Imperial. There are so many people that just left the Empire because of nonsense like this, where it's just people getting thrown under the bus as scapegoats, like Rampart's case, or just not feeling comfortable with, like, doing stuff with kids and crap. Like, this is very interesting that we're seeing an early rebellion within, like, a year or so of the Empire. That we're seeing how that extrapolates to another 17 or 18 years down the line. You totally understand how this just became a snowball effect when all these leaders, Mon Mothma leaves the Senate, all that kind of thing.
Right. No, it makes sense. I mean, I think you look at real-world governments over history, I'm sure George Lucas, you know, looked at a lot of this and saying, hey, you know, look at Julius. I mean, look at the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
You know, Julius Caesar was helmed as the great hero when he crossed the Rubicon. And then when he did that, instead of him being that hero, which perceived he was, he turned it into a dictatorship. Look at the people within that government. They said, okay, he's too much. We got to axe old boy. And look what they did. The Ides of March, mm-hmm. stabby, stabby, stabby. You know, then we see what happens to, you know, the fall of the Roman Empire. So, like, history does repeat itself in a lot of ways. And I think Star Wars took real-life history and said, okay, this is where the seeds of how the fall of the Empire will begin. Within rebellion outside of it, but also rebellion within it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm very much looking to see even you know, a character like Emery Carr. They are totally telegraphing her defection as well. She's going to be the reason why Omega leaves. There's no other way she can communicate. Her trackers have been taken away, all that good stuff. It's going to be up to just that one person that can change the galaxy. And that is a constant thing with Star Wars, is doing the right thing, standing up for what you believe in, knowing right from wrong, like the stuff like that. It's interesting. I'm just very curious what you thought about Rampart, Ben. What do you think about this guy? Did you think we'd ever see him again? Do you think he's going to play a bigger role in the show going forward, or Star Wars? Maybe he pops up somewhere else in the Rebellion. Where do you think his trajectory could go at this point?
Well, first of all, for starters, with his character, whoever plays Rampart, his voice acting is so good. Like, he is like a perfect villain. Like, that, I don't know, his voice acting, I think, is excellent for that character. That was one of the immediate things I thought.
I'm about to blow your mind. with that guy. I don't know if you played much of it, but he is the character of Boda Kuna in Jedi Survivor, the good friend of Cal Kestis. Yep, that's Nashir. Oh, the voice actor's name is Nashir. I don't know the last name. I'll look it up right now, but...
Interesting. I did not know that. Yeah, we play. I mean, like I said, I played through all the first game, but yeah, like his actor or his character was a big surprise to like see popping back up again, because like I don't know. I guess I just was assuming the show was probably going in a direction where it's like, hey, we got to go contact Rex and the crew, and like maybe they'll help us find some way to get there from, you know, through like a seedy way, like through the underworld or something. So like I wasn't expecting them to go breaking out an Imperial, so that was kind of like a good surprise. And then I do think though, like there's a chance we see maybe a little bit of Rampart in this next episode, but I feel like he might not be like super involved. Like I think we'll get probably one scene from him in the next one, and be like it'll push the Bad Batch along the storyline for this show. But I feel like he's going to be another character that kind of gets like, I'm not saying retconned in a bad way, but like pseudo retconned like into the original trilogy era. Maybe like, you know, maybe he was like part of like some part of the Rebel fleet, like attacking Endor or something, like, you know, one of these major battles, like, cause, I think what Hera was involved with Endor, like, you know, different characters like that have been kind of like, or even Captain Rex, notably like pseudo retconned into the OT. I think there's a chance Rampart gets that treatment just because he's been like a pretty, like, I would say consistent character throughout the Bad Batch overall. Like he's, you know, for him making it to the final half of the final season means if he survives, then I think there's a good chance he gets kind of like put into the OT somewhere, like being involved with something.
Yeah. At the very least they'll throw him into a comic. Like they did with the guy from Rogue One. That's General Dryden. Wait.
What's his name?
Dryden? No, I'm thinking about like two characters at once. I'm thinking about Dryden Voss from Solo, and then what the heck is this Andor's commander's name in the Rebel Alliance? I forget. It's something like that. Anyway, that's the first thing comics will do, is they'll pick up characters from an animated series and be like, hey, look at that guy, he survived over here. And we're going to be like, make a bunch of YouTube videos on, he's around this time, post Return of the Jedi or something like that. So, yeah, really cool. I just want to take a second to talk about how cool the turbo tank actually is. I mean, I think the first one we've ever seen was at the Battle of Kashyyyk in Revenge of the Sith. And then we've seen them at Wobani in Rogue One, carrying Jyn Erso to a work camp. And then we see, you know, of course, we've seen a nice battle with Mandalorian in Season 2, Episode 7, True Believer or something like that, where him and Migs Megfield are just, like, fighting on top. Mando's huddling off all of these goons, and he's can't have the explosives go off because it's going to light the whole thing and blow it up with the Baradium or whatever they're carrying. So I have been enjoying just the overall feel, but this is the coolest we've ever seen this vehicle yet. I mean, this thing is, it earns its name in every detail. The juggernaut, this thing just plows through other vehicles. I love the effects of the visual effects with the missiles that are just like spraying out. It's like that anti-missile lock stuff, and just ramming through like a freaking monster truck too. Like that animation for that was great.
Oh yeah, the animation on the show has been like really on point, like with the vehicles, just the way the whole action sequence of breaking Rampart out, I think was done really good, like cinematically, like the way they shot it, like obviously it's not like shooting with a hand camera, but you know, it's like the way they shot it looks really like TV show-esque. Like it kind of reminded me, like honestly, like the whole breakout kind of reminded me of the train episode from Boba Fett, where they were like doing that whole heist. Like that's really, really, really what I thought of actually watching this episode was. It made me think of that a lot. Just the way it was shot, it was very similar, almost like indie-esque, like the way they shot that. Yeah. So I really did enjoy the way they're doing the cinematography for a lot of this stuff, as well as, of course, like you said, the visual animation is just on point with this series so far. Like, it's so good.
Oh yeah, I was getting, besides Rebels vibes, I was getting flashbacks to the Rogue Squadron video games. And I haven't played them since I was like 10 or 12, but I think I remember something about like work camps and you were in an X-wing and you're like shooting these like ground vehicles and like it was all about like, oh, this guy's defecting, we got to rescue him. And I was just getting vibes from that, like the idea that they're breaking out somebody. It's on this desert looking kind of arid planet with these canyons. I was like, oh, this kind of reminds me of Rogue Squadron a little bit. So shout out to that game. Love that game. But here's the thing. I was very intrigued by what was going on with Hemlock and Omega. But I was also, and this is where I go with the where I was alluding to with the payoff versus the build up in the season. I was really convinced that we were going to see what was in the actual vault that me and Ben have been talking about for weeks, and they pulled out the rug from under us again. It's like, oh, here are the kids. Like, of course they're going to bring her to the kids. Like, but I was just so ready to get the biggest reveal in Star Wars history. Is it Snoke? Is it a Dark Trooper program? No, it's just getting shepherded into the rest of the kids over there. I'm like,
yeah, that's
that was a letdown. That was a letdown.
That's one concern I've had, and I know I've talked to other folks. Like, I think I'm friends with like Jason Ward from Making Star Wars. I know I've talked to him before about it, and that's his concern. How they're doing this series is like, are we going to just have like a final action sequence and like say this storyline be just like a carrot in front of us and then we never ever get to that carrot and it's just going to be like left in the background? Like, I really hope we get something out of it. Like say if it is like Dark Troopers, like we know the Emperor stuff going on, but say if we also have a Dark Trooper thing going on, like at least give us like a reveal, like let the Dark Troopers out on their first ever combat scenario versus the Bad Batch or something. Like give us that reward, because the thing is, if we just get like, if we get just like a basic rescue mission of Omega, like say Emery breaks her out, then Emery has to get like stay to save her or whatever, sacrifice herself, etc. Like, yeah, that'll be a cool sequence, I'm sure, the way they'll do it action wise but we want payoff for the Dark Troopers. Or like, the only way I could see it paying off in a way that could maybe be satisfying is, like, if we, even if we don't get, like, Dark Troopers in action or something like that, maybe, you know, maybe it's something like Emery breaks her out, and then, like, the Bad Batch leaves, and we get kind of an epilogue with Hemlock saying, well, Emery, you know, it sucks for you, but, you know, we did all our testing we need, we got the blood we need from Omega, blah, 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 the plan can move forward. Like, so the Empire still kind of wins at the end of all this, even though Omega and the crew got away. Like, maybe we get something like that. But I don't know. That's my only kind of running a little bit concern is, like, are we just going to keep getting that, like, carrot dangled in front of us and we just never get to it?
That's what I'm afraid of, exactly. Concerning of the Emperor's, like, ultimate, like, plan for his body and all. I mean, we kind of can't have that work. If it works in this, then there's no Rise of Skywalker. That doesn't exist. Like, he, because the thing is, like, that was the whole point of the Rise of Skywalker. His body was failing, and they couldn't figure it out even 35 years later, or however.
And the point
time.
Of Grogu.
And the point of Grogu, like, they're still looking for. So ultimately, Tantus is probably gonna get destroyed, and they're gonna try to relocate the Exegol. That's why I keep saying Exegol. I feel like Tantus and Exegol are going to be interchangeable for me, because it's just like 1A, 1B, or 1A, 2A, something like that, where it's like, okay, this is the next logical place. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think that we're going to get a lot of good closure. It's just like, oh man, we have 3 episodes left. Let's kick this thing into overdrive, you know?
Oh yeah, I think this coming week will be another, I don't want to say into stepping stone, but I think it could be a stepping stone, because, you know, we always get like the penultimate episode and the finale are always like kind of 1A and 1B. Like, they're kind of more of a two-parter, even though they're not two parts this year. It's like, you know, a lot of shows, it's basically a two-parter, because like you have some sort of big thing lead off in the penultimate, and then the finale is the finale. So like, I think there's a chance this coming week's like more of like a stepping stone, etc. Like, maybe we get a tad bit more of what's going on with Omega, where it's like, hey, you know, maybe we see more, like, maybe Hemlock walks her into another room and you literally get straight up Dark Troopers getting worked on or something. Like maybe it's something like that. Just because, and then, you know, we also have the whole Emery Carr stuff. Like, Emery's going to be working on some sort of breaking out plan. And I really, I don't think she survives this just because, I don't know. Is everybody going to survive? Like, that's the only thing. So it's just like, I feel like the one, like with Emery breaking her out, I think there's a really good chance she gets taken out to like save Omega or something, where it's like, no, Omega, like go escape. I'll stay here and distract Hemlock or something.
Oh man. Yeah, Milton. So I'll throw it over to you, man. Do you have anything else to add to this episode? I do not have a lot of notes on this episode because it's just like, it's mainly a lot of action. Omega, yeah, we learned all the information about Omega already. It's like, yeah, her blood is going to stabilize the blood so they can reproduce the blood, but they have to have her blood to be able to do that sort of thing. So there's not a lot of new information that's given to the viewer. The relationship stuff with the Bad Batch is more just like action, fun stuff. So for me, there wasn't as much to dig into this episode, but I don't know, maybe you had more.
No, I agree 100%. I think this is just, I think they're just pushing along what the finale is going to be, in the sense of they had to get her back to Tantus. They had to build up more stakes to say, okay, we have to, one, get the payoff of, are they going to rescue the clones? Are we going to get a payoff on Project Necromancer from the perspective of this particular show? You know, what's going to be the fates of the clones when they, because, I mean, we can't just let Hemlock just go. Like, something has to happen to him, because clearly he wasn't, I don't know if he wasn't around during the rise of the Empire or whatever, but something happens to him.
Yeah.
He's very vital to the project, so we need to get that payoff. So I think this is setting up a, hopefully, a three-part finale to finish off this show. And just like I mentioned earlier, does this particular ending that's coming in the next 3 weeks, does it lead into a new animation that will continue this story? I mean, and that's a discussion we can have once we're done with this particular show, but I think the episode did its job. It's setting up, okay, these next 3 weeks, there will be stakes. Something or someone should die, or something tragic should happen, or something good should happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree with you there. I think we'll have some sort of stakes, whether it be for the good or the bad guys in this show. Like, something will happen for sure, because we've seen different perspectives in the animated shows. Like, you know, good guys or bad guys winning. Like, I mean, look at the end of Rebels. Like, Thrawn kind of wins / loses. Ezra kind of wins / loses. Like, you know, you have different things, different perspectives. So there's a chance, like, the good guys and bad guys both get a win. I mean, who knows? Maybe here's something to throw out there, Chris. Like, talk about, like, what if they throw in a tiny little Easter egg to Kenobi? What if you have, like, Hemlock get a thing, like, say at the end, I don't know, Omega escapes. What if Hemlock gets, like, a comm or something, and it's like, oh, hey, you know, we've captured another specimen, yada, yada, and, like, it's kind of like implying like Grogu or something, because we know Grogu goes dark somewhere. Like, so maybe we get just a little Easter egg for that or something, because we have to have like Grogu has to, like, something has to happen to him eventually. So maybe we get an Easter egg, like a nod to that, even just because it's like, I don't know. There's some, they have to continue this project on. Like you said, is it going to be Tantus destroyed, and then we literally go straight, we go to Exegol, we see Exegol in like an epilogue or something, maybe. Like, maybe it's something like that. Like, I think there's a lot of different directions they could go with this finale. And like you said, Milton, hopefully it's kind of more of like a pseudo three-part finale.
Yeah, so looking at the episode titles, the next week is going to be called Into the Breach, then the week after, Flash Strike, and then the finale, of course, is called The Calvary Has Arrived. So it does seem like Into the Breach, they're going to be breaching Tantus this upcoming week, it sounds like. They're going to get the information, and they're going to probably start the assault, what I would imagine.
An interesting note, too, I saw someone point out on Twitter. So the very first line the Bad Batch ever says, actually, the Wrecker says the Calvary has arrived in the Clone Wars. like in his in the Bad Batch's first appearance.
Yeah,
that's actually his very first line. So it's interesting that that's the finale's title.
Here's my guess: they're gonna be up against the ropes. Wrestling term there. There you go. And we're gonna have Captain Rex come in with the cavalry, and he's gonna have every possible free clone trooper ever. He's gonna lead an entire assault of all these clones, and a lot of them will recognize as well. Maybe even we'll see Wolf there as well. I remember seeing him for that short episode. But yeah, overall, I like the episode. I'm gonna give it an 8 out of 10. Really great animation. Didn't push the envelope far enough for me to give it a higher score as far as like story goes, but it's still a very well done episode. So what about you, Ben?
Yeah, for me, you know, I can just echo all of our sentiments throughout this episode. It was a good stepping stone episode for the story. Wasn't incredible, wasn't terrible. And I went into it just thinking I was going to give it a solid 8 as well.
All right, there you go. What about you, Matt, Milton?
I think my perspective might be slightly different just because I watched it in a lump sum. I would probably go 8.25. I think that for how it paid off for me from watching episode 9 until episode 12, it was tighter. It seemed a little more tighter as a lump. Now I can see it being a single episode weekly. I can see that 8. But I think 8.5 because the action, the animation, and there's a payoff to it in a sense of, okay, they got Rampart. He's going to now get him to the next step to get to Omega. So I would say 8.25. Again, it wasn't nothing that... It wasn't a spectacular episode where I'm like, oh, great character development, or wow, I didn't know that about the story, or that surprised me. None of that. It was more just get us to the next phase of to what you guys' goals are. So I think a good 8.25.
There you go. 8s around the board plus an 8.25. Yeah, so jumping over to another medium of Star Wars, we got the news announced last Friday, I believe, that we were going to get a trailer for Star Wars Outlaws, the upcoming Ubisoft open world Star Wars game on Tuesday at 12 p.m. Eastern. It did not disappoint because the trailer dropped and everyone around the world was ready to watch this thing. And as I suspect, we got a release date for August 30th. So there you go. You can pin that on your map. It's going to be a Star Wars summer Acolyte coming out in June. Then we have this coming out in August. So lots of fun to be had on the screen with Star Wars, plus all the mini books and all. So we're going to take a quick kind of more of a cursory look on some images I pulled from the actual trailer. I definitely want to get your take on this, Milton. This is Canto Bight in a video game. You can tell by those ships we've seen from Last Jedi. So, hey, maybe they're going to make Canto Bight a cool location for the larger fan base out there. What do you have to say about this?
We good. Like, you ain't going to, no. Like, look, for real, like, you know, we know how I feel about that movie. It is what it is. But, I mean, look, if Canto Bight serves a purpose in this video game and it pushes the narrative and it's a cool setting, then I'm all about it. I mean, let's be objective here. Let's not be weird. I mean, look, it's a great looking image. You know, that looks like Star Wars to me. However, it didn't work in a movie. We can all admit that, but it can work in a game. It's just like, look at how, for example, another animation project versus live. You look at X-Men. Not everyone would think Wolverine in that blue and yellow short stature can work in live action. There's no way at that time it could work in live action. It works best in animation. Just like with Canto Bight. It probably didn't work well in the movie, which it didn't. It may work best in the video game realm of, you know, this medium. So I could see this being better here. But again, I'm not against it. If it serves the purpose of the story, if it pushes the narrative, if it's a cool level to play, then by all means, play it.
There you go. This is our big bad, at least the big bad that we recognize. We know Star Wars has lots of twists and turns in it, so this might be some minor boss compared to an ultimate boss overhead. But this is, I believe this guy's name is Sliro. He is in charge of a brand new criminal underground group. I'm going to have to look their name up real quick, but it's not committed to memory yet. But anyway, yeah, he's going to be uniting, trying to, in this scene, he's making a group effort to get these criminal syndicates. Remember, this is before Empire. It's before Return of the Jedi, in between Empire. And that shatters the Empire era, which is just ripe for so much stuff with smugglers and bounty hunters, as we know in the expanded universe. So, yeah, this guy's going to be getting together characters such as this. Now, I thought this character was Kira. Apparently, it is not. But the voiceover from that mob boss there does say Crimson Dawn. And, you know, I've been waiting for them to make an appearance because they were first appearing in War of the Bounty Hunters. That's when Kira was revealed to be alive during the original trilogy. We didn't know anything about her after Solo. She just disappears, leads Crimson Dawn after Maul tells her to come to Dathomir. And now we're actually going to see her, because it was confirmed through Game Informer magazine, Lady Kira will be one of the crime bosses. So this person looks like Kira, but even if it's not her, we definitely are going to have the actual Kira in the game at some point. There's a screenshot that I didn't get a chance to grab from one of their articles. That is definitely Lady Kira. So what do you think about that, Ben? About Crimson Dawn coming into play with the Pikes, with the Hutts? Like, they're pulling no punches when it comes to getting all these different criminals out here.
Yeah, I think it's really cool seeing them pull these characters in from like the movies, the comics, etc., and like tie them into games, because like that's gaming is such a nice way, like a good way, like where people can interact with like the characters, like, you know, actually interact with them versus just like reading about them or something. So like, it's cool getting that aspect of it. And then the fact that, you know, like the Crimson Dawn and like Kira and all these other groups are going to be involved. It just makes me more interested in the game overall as a whole. Because I think that's going to be like my make or break thing when it comes to this game, is like, okay, sure, it's not, you know, you're not playing as like Boba Fett or something, but you're, as long as you're like getting more ancillary touches of like, say, known entities like the Crimson Dawn, like as we see Jabba, like those type of things, I think that's a big selling point for people. Because like, if you're placing the game in the OT, you want to bump up to OT imagery. So I'm excited to hear about more of that sort of stuff. And then on a side note too, even though I know it's a totally different character, man, like the name timing on some of these characters made me like scratch my head just a little bit. Obviously, like gaming and animation is completely different, but like the character that Fennec Shand had the crew hunt down, like Silurus whatever, a few weeks back, like I was like, and then we got this guy named like Silas something, whatever. I'm like, man, we have all these like wonky, like Silas, Silurus, like these nicknames or these names. And it's like, holy smokes, these names sound so similar in just a couple week time period. Like I had to double check, cause I looked up the image of the character from Bad Batch just to make sure it wasn't the same guy, which it isn't, but yeah. So like, I don't know. It's going to be cool seeing it. And like you said, I'm sure this is more like maybe your early boss or something, because like, I don't know, would they really show the biggest bad character of the game? I'm not sure.
Yeah. But you know, for instance, Jedi Survivor, I'm not going to spoil it, but they lead you to believe a certain character is the villain, and then they pull the rug out from under you. And then there's like another 6 hours left of the game where it was a completely surprising villain that you face off against. And it's like, whoa, that was crazy. So I fully expect storytelling to have lots of twists and turns. Some images I was cycling through there is obviously the Empire is a big deal, right? This is the height of the Empire, right, in this era. So we're going to see lots of stormtroopers running around. KVS looks really cool. She's got apparently a tattoo on her chest. I didn't see that on the first trailer. So again, adding more uniqueness to these characters by having cool tattoos and stuff like that. Now this guy here, his name is Jaylen. This is the guy from the first trailer. I thought, a lot of us thought that, oh, is this Kyle Katarn? Nah, this is his own character. He's got a surname that I do not know at this point, but he is going to be like your shepherd into the criminal underworld. This guy is going to be like your sort of mentor in a way. I guess kind of like Beckett in a way. Mm. I don't know. Okay, I looked it up. These guys are called the Zerik Besh. They are just new to Star Wars. They were developed by Massive Studios, which is making the game. So it's cool. We're getting, you know, the tried and true people like the Hutts and like the Crimson Dawn and stuff. But we're getting new things thrown in here. And there's going to be another clan that I will talk about. I mean, yeah, their imagery is interesting. These guys have different kind of helmets. Not really Mandalorian. It's not anything else we've seen before. So that's sure to make them stand out. We also have a bounty hunter character. I believe her name is Vale. Looks like she's somewhat of a cyborg that's going to be working with Sliro. The backstory of this game is apparently you as K-Vess, you steal something from Sliro. And you actually, K-Vess does come from Cantonica, Canto Bight. So she's a Canto Bight resident, our main character, Milton. So we'll see how that goes.
No wonder she wants to leave there.
Hey man, if it works.
Yeah, so you're being tracked. He sends this guy out after you botch one of his jobs when you're working for him originally. So interesting stuff there. Yeah, I mean this looks like in-game footage of Canto Bight right here. It looks really nice at night. I'm pretty sure there's like night and day cycles for maybe most of the planets, if not all of them. Here's where we know exactly where we are in Star Wars. We get to actually see Han and Carbonite, right? So you are basically playing a female Han Solo. And this is where my thought process went the other day. This is exactly kind of what they did with Shadows of the Empire. It's like, okay, we don't have Han Solo in the game at this point, but let's like make a diet Han Solo with Dash Rendar, as people like to say. So if Dash Rendar is not canonized in this game, I'm assuming that K-Vess is supposed to basically be like the Dash Rendar. You know, we don't have Han Solo as a smuggler, but even like some of her attitude evokes Han Solo. And I know a lot of the smugglers in general throughout Star Wars Legends and other games stuff, like a lot of people, that's their favorite character. So when you're a game creator or writer or whatever, you're gonna naturally gravitate getting influence from Han, injecting into your own made characters and stuff like that. But that, I don't know, Ben, that's where I was going with that thought. I was like, this could be our Dash Rendar, if you will, for canonical Star Wars, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's a chance if they don't like reference Dash, like that, in my opinion, they should reference Dash in this game just to do it. Give it to the fans who, you know, give it to the fans. We've seen his ship in A New Hope. Like we know he's there. Like, but yeah, if not, if we don't get him referenced ever, like this is probably our quote unquote like version of Dash Rendar, basically. But yeah, I mean it's cool just getting like more smuggler characters, and they can always do like so many, you know, variations. Like people enjoy the smuggler characters just because of the way Harrison Ford like played Han, especially in A New Hope, and like, you know, that really put people on to like that archetype for gaming in general, I would say. And of course, like, you know, the carryover from Shadows of the Empire, as well as books and other media. Smugglers are just such like an important role in Star Wars, where it's just like, you know, fans like really enjoy it. I mean, look, like I said, I've been going through a lot of the old Legends books, and like, you know, Talon Card and his gang are like one of the more main groups. And like, you know, his character is one of the most interesting side characters, and he's a smuggler because you never know what he's going to do, because is he going to pull something bad or is he going to do something good? Like, so like, that's the cool thing about a smuggler type character, is you have more of like, you can ride the fence more with them versus not. I mean, even though like Lando technically isn't a smuggler, but look at his character, like, you know, he's good and bad in Empire Strikes Back, basically. So like, you know, those type of characters have like formed what people like about the smuggler archetype.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Milton, what's your take on, I'm not sure if you can see the image right now, but like, I don't know. Have you played many open world games where you have like big, you know, vast cities, expanses to explore? Because the image here that I pulled up, I'm pretty amazed, because as I'm playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla currently for the last couple months, it never ceases to amaze me, like the worlds that Ubisoft makes, where it's just like you feel like so immersed with all like just the people walking around these cities and different things like that.
I'm sure I have. I just never really like took the time to actually invest. I mean, I think the last time I played a game like that was Last of Us. I didn't finish it, but not when it comes to many open world games, I've played a lot of them. I think the last one actually probably completed, if you want to call it an open world, was probably one of the Force Unleashed games, honestly. Because I'm honestly more of like sports or like, you know, those type of games when I play, when I do get the chance to sit down and play. And honestly, I don't really play too many games often unless it's old retro ones. So a lot of the new ones, yeah, I really don't do a lot of the open world ones unless I take the time to invest and sit in and play every night.
Yeah, I mean, Ben, the most recent one would probably be Luke's Skywalker Saga Lego Skywalker.
For me, I would probably Star Wars. My most recent one for me was definitely the Skywalker Saga. I would say just you know, and then more not like non Lego. I don't know. Probably the most recent one for me, non Lego. I mean, of course, you have kind of the Force Unleashed games, but I would say back probably 3 years ago, 4 years ago, during the pandemic time, me and my cousin went and sat down and played through one of the Spider-Man games on his PlayStation. And like, that's kind of open world, because, you know, you can just kind of like climb
swing around anywhere. Yeah, Milton, you got to get that.
Like that, about, that no, was no, really I, fun.
The first Spider-Man game for PlayStation, the most recent one.
Yeah.
No, I did play that one. I forgot about that. Play that. I beat that.
That's one of the best examples of an open world game. Like, their open world in New York is just nuts. Yeah,
that's the one I played. I really enjoyed that one a lot.
So, yeah, I'm hoping for that caliber of open world. And I don't think Ubisoft has always done a great job with those. Oh, okay. So this next image here is what I alluded to earlier as well. This is the queen, I believe, or the matriarch of the Oshiga clan, which is a brand new, another new clan that Ubisoft Massive is bringing into Outlaws for the first time. They are housed out of, based out of Kijimi from Rise of Skywalker. So we're getting a lot of sequel trilogy plans, which is pretty neat. Just, you know, adding to the lore and the just overall canon of Star Wars. So liking the look of these things. Apparently they are more like insectoid, even though they are wearing a lot of armor and whatnot. They are mainly insectoid characters. So that's pretty cool. This is what I was talking about, this image of just like the density of the amount of people as you're just like walking through a cantina. You'll just randomly see like a Twi'lek and different people you have to like brush shoulders to get through. Classic Ubisoft kind of stuff right there. Going forward here. Yep, here is a Pike boss. I believe this guy has a specific name, maybe. I'm sure he does. But he's basically kicking Kay Vess out of this place saying, hey, you're not even anybody that I should even be talking to because you're such a low scum. Some to that degree. Interesting stuff there. And this is also what Ben was alluding to. Magnificent shot of Jabba's throne room. I mean, you got everything Return of Jedi in here. You got your Kowakian monkey lizard. You got your Gamorrean guards. You got the Rancor pit right below you. I mean, this is just everything I want out of a Star Wars game right here. Just walking into Jabba's palace like this. This is awesome.
Oh yeah, I think that's a really cool shot. It makes you wonder too. I hope they add in some little Easter eggs, you know, like, hey, if you, I don't know, walk to a certain part of the palace and you look out a viewport, you could see like Boba's ship outside or something. Oh, you know, like I love Easter eggs in games like that where it's just like you can't interact with it, but you know, you just look out and you see something like that. Like I would love if we get something like that, or even like, you know, you walk in and you look down and you see the Rancor like down there looking up at you or something.
Yep.
Like those type of imageries I think are just so cool. Like I love when games do that. I mean, heck, even in Lego the Skywalker Saga, like some of the, you know, in some of the missions you can like punch open crates, and if you look down into them you can see, it's funny because they have like old the other old Lego games, like they had the old original Skywalker Saga, like the you know, episodes 4, 5, and 6, like there's little crates, like it looks like DVDs of like the old Lego games. So it's cool, like little Easter eggs like that thrown in games. So I hope they utilize Jabba's Palace in a way to like maybe throw in just a tad little, you know, a few little Easter eggs here and there.
Yeah, I can't tell how much time I've basically spent in Battlefront 1 2015 when they released the Jabba the Hutt DLC. Just running, not even trying to kill opponents. I would just run around Jabba's Palace going like, I've never seen this room before, or I've never seen this wall that we never seen on the other side of the camera. So stuff like that, when the game designers are given the chance by Lucasfilm to just like expand on a location, and it just never ceases to amaze me about, oh yeah, this is what's over here in the corner of Jabba's Palace that is right over on the other side of the camera. Oh, that's really neat. Another really great detail that we didn't get from the original release reveal of the game is that you're going to be putting together a crew of other criminals and smugglers to do this one heist. So this entire game, you're gearing up for like the ultimate heist. So very curious what that could be. And apparently, according at some point in this trailer, the bounty hunter Vale is talking to Celero and said she's got her mind on something bigger than ourselves or something like that. It's like, that is the curious thing. Now, is she gonna, we know there's a lot of rebellion, we know there's a lot of empire. I've said this before, but it's like, she doing ultimately a mission for the rebellion at some point, right? Like, maybe this is the first third of the game they're showing, like, oh yeah, you're gonna get back at this guy that you faulted, but then after that maybe you join the rebellion. Maybe it's like Force Unleashed, right, where there's a lot larger of an end game at the end of it or something like that. But yeah, it's really cool because you're going to be building a crew. So I'm showing images of like ND5, your droid, and then you have this Chadrafan little character here. I'm guessing he's going to be part of your squad, you know.
Well, here's even something, Chris. What if they flip it on you? What if it's you're gathering a bunch of information of where the rebels' exact base is in the OT? And then you as KVS, you end up having to like make the choice, turn in the rebels or destroy it and like escape or something. Like maybe they do something like that even, because like, because I think when they say like something bigger, it's either like involved with the rebellion or empire. Like it could go, I think, either way.
That would be so cool if they flipped the switch on Battlefront 2, where like you started out as a good character or a bad character. Iden goes to be a rebellion, you know, officer. What if you end up like basically working for the empire to sell the rebellion out, you know? It's just like, you tell the empire that they're amassing at Sollust, because the emperor always knew that, like he always knew that they were going to, that's why they laid the trap, obviously. So it's like,
so yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunities where they could fill in some of those blanks.
Sure As we know, there's going to be space combat, your trailblazer ship here being tailed by some really great looking TIE interceptors. So very curious to see how the space combat works, because you're going to be able to basically transition right from the planet to space with like, they're going to probably hide the loading screen behind clouds and stuff as you're like, you know, a couple seconds going through clouds. It's like the artificial loading screen or whatever you have you, but I'm still looking forward to seeing how the space combat is. Me and you, we're playing Starfield earlier this year, and I enjoyed the space combat for what it is, and I'm looking to see what this third person space combat could be, you know.
Space combat's always interesting to see how they do it, because we've seen so many iterations of it, whether it be Starfield, Lego Star Wars, Star Wars Battlefront, Halo, whatever. Like every game is so different on their space combat, so like I don't know what to expect with it, honestly.
So it looks like you're going to be doing a lot of traversing as well. I know there's plenty of this, which I have a great time doing in Jedi series. Cal Kestis jumping around. Looks like you got a grapple hook and stuff. You can swing around like you're Indiana Jones, so, which is also coming out this year. So a lot of cool swinging action going around. On Tatooine, of course, you got to go and you got to, you know, involve yourself with some kind of Sarlacc pit at some point. So there you go. Classic iconography of the desert planet there.
Yep.
We got one of my favorite units in all of Star Wars, the Dark Trooper. No, Death Trooper, sorry. Death Trooper, the other trooper that's black and starts with a D. So it's cool there. We got an AT-ST. We already seen an AT-ST was in the original reveal. nothing new there, but it's still cool to see actual vehicles that you're going to be going up against. All right, then we also have whatever these like little spider things. I'm guessing that they explode if they get you near you. Because many of other games have always had these enemies that try to get near you, then they're glowing, and they always explode if you get too close. I'm looking at you, those characters from Gears of War, that the Lambit things that explode or whatever they are.
The flood in Halo.
Flood, yeah. And this is one thing I did not expect, is we're going to get to actually see a crate dragon a la Mandalorian. Or actually, yeah, the Mandalorian. No. Yeah, Mandalorian Season 2. That wasn't Book of Boba Fett. See, it's all bleeding together, the Mandoverse these days. This looks just like the one from Mandalorian 2. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like literally the same one. This does take place before that, so it could be, you know. That's going to be nuts, trying to go as a boss battle, trying to take this thing down. Oh my gosh. Oh man. But yeah, there you have it. That was a trailer for Star Wars Outlaws. Super excited for this one. Ben, I did some extra research and seen that, you know, they have the Ultimate Collection, the Premium Collection or Edition, whatever. But if you pre-order the game, they're going to have a Jabba the Hutt's Gambit mission. And then there's a season pass. They're actually going to have continuing story for this game. That's like the first.
Oh, that's good.
They're going to have story DLC. Yeah, they're going to have two story DLC plus the pre-order thing with Jabba the Hutt. So I'm excited, because that's the one gripe I have, is that Jedi Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor are so good. I'm like always waiting, like, oh, please release more content. I don't want to wait another 3 years for the game. Just give us like another like little hour long mission or something, epilogue. And they never got that. The only Star Wars game currently that has done that has been Battlefront 2 with the Resurrection DLC, which came out right before The Last Jedi. And I was going to tie things in. It was like a 30-year time jump with Iden Versio and her daughter and Shriv, and they're finding out about the First Order, and you're going on a show. It was awesome. So I'm hoping for caliber of that level. Assassin's Creed from the same publisher, they always put out like a whole nother year worth of DLC, and it's all story based stuff that's really good from what I hear. So it's nice to just know that, hey, maybe we'll be finished the game in, you know, September or October, but hey, maybe by next May, we'll have more to play, more to talk about. So that's good to see.
Oh yeah. That's really good to see. You know, that be included with the DLC or, with the game and everything. So it's an exciting time to be a Star Wars fan. We have, like you said earlier, to open this discussion on this game, like we have, the Acolyte, or, well, heck, we have Tales of the Empire coming up, then the Acolyte, and then this game, and then we have Skeleton Crew later in the year. So it's just like we have a good action-packed bit of Star Wars coming up. And speaking of that, actually, not to transition, like not to hard cut off of this game too quickly, or I was going to ask Milton, what are your thoughts on the Tales of the Empire trailer? Because we didn't get a chance to really, I think, hear your reaction on that. And like the fact that it's coming out May 4th and they're releasing it on a Saturday on a weekend. Like, what are your like thoughts on that? Thoughts on like Barriss and Morgan Elsbeth being the focus and just getting like, you know, more of the Empire as a whole?
It's going to be fire. That's my thought. Like, it looked good. Like, I mean, you already know, like, I love Tales of the Jedi, how well done that was. I mean, I was one of the early ones who was like really on that, like heavy. Yep. I watched it multiple times. The Tales of the Empire, I feel like it's going to be the same thing. Like, even though it's supposed to be an evil entity, which they'll show that aspect, but it's nice to see the human side of these characters, even though they're quote unquote villains. And that's what makes these stories attractive. So I'm ready for it. I know it's going to be good. Like, I already know it's going to be good because they proved it so far with a lot of those animations. So it shouldn't be trash. And if it is, you'll hear me first say it's trash. So I'm hyped for it. I mean, me and my brother, we're talking about it and can't wait to talk to him about it once they come out.
We'll be talking about that in 3 weeks. Wait, I don't even know. We're gonna have a production meeting on there right now, I guess, because it's like, we're gonna be talking about potentially the Bad Batch's finale and a new Star Wars show in the same week. We'll probably just have to do that on the next show. We'll just save it for the next show.
Yeah, we can dedicate the whole next week.
The whole next week. We can't be splitting up the ending of a series and a whole nother series in the same episode. So
yeah, well, we can always do what we did with Visions, where, you know, we can give a little 10-minute, you know, just our initial impressions on Tales, and then go from there, and then just talk Bad Batch finale.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe 1 week we'll do...
If it's as good as I think it's going to be, you don't need to get much from me. I'm going to give you a couple sentences. It's fire. It's dope. It was off the chain. Done. Like, I don't need... Look, we already know it's going to be good. Yeah. Like, they have not disappointed on that miniseries so far. Well, they have not. I see them doing that again.
Well, man, Milton, I thought it was so great. Like, the end of that trailer, like... The Inquisitor introducing to Barriss, like, hey, this is like your big master, and it's Vader at the end. Like, holy fire, cow. Dude.
That's what I'm saying. Like, because here's the thing, though. Like, you have to tell that story. You got to tell, okay, you got to tell the Grand Inquisitor story. Obviously, Morgan Elsbeth. What happened to the Jedi who were captured? You know, because you know they tried to turn them, obviously, with the Inquisitor program. You know, like, you have to see what was going on with, what's his name? Blue guy. Admiral,
Grand Admiral Thrawn.
You had to see what's going on with him, because he's an important part of the Empire. So I'm glad we're getting his perspective, which I think opens the door up for other stories now, in a sense of Tales of the Jedi, Tales of the Empire, let's say Tales of the Rebellion, Tales of the Resistance, you know, something to that nature, where you give us these 20-minute episodes, I'm about that life. You know what I'm saying? Yep. Let's go. If not disappointed.
It's a brilliant it's a brilliant idea that will never stop. I mean, they could literally, and it's a brilliant idea by Lucasfilm Animation, because they're not beholden to a certain name of anything. So literally any subsect of Star Wars can every year they can explore 6 episodes. So I think we'll know every year we'll at least get this show at some point about something.
You know what they need to do? It'll be right up your alleyway of Smugglers and things such as that regard. Hey, go right off the old Legends book, Tales from Jabba's Palace. Like that would be Tales from, even just Tales of the Bounty Hunters.
That's
like,
what I'm thinking. You know,
there's so many opportunities. So, it's exciting. And yeah, I wanted to make sure we got Milton's thoughts on that, just because that was such a surprise drop. Like, you know, that's something we always talk about, Milton. Like, Star Wars never surprises us. It's always like, I mean, heck, I hate to say it, but a lot of times it's, you know, it's like bad news, bad news, bad news. And like, they surprise drop, hey, here's a trailer, here's a show, there were no leaks about it, nothing, and it's only coming out in a month. Like, that's excellent news.
There we go. Yep, so great thing to end on. Milton, thanks for joining us again. We're happy to see you had a great time over there in Philly with the WrestleMania. Where can people find some stuff that you might have posted from that? Uh-oh. Am I live still?
Yeah, you're live. I think we might have lost Milton's audio.
Oh, okay. I think he might have frozen, actually. Anyway, I'll throw it to you first, Ben, and hopefully we can get him back.
Okay. You can find me on X at Real Ben Maynard. I'm always talking like fitness or Star Wars or Arrow or stuff like that. And then on Instagram at Real Ben Maynard as well. And like, you know, I try to post my workouts on my stories and stuff over there. And then, like, if you want to find Milton, you can find his Twitter account at MiltonWeber7. And then his Instagram is Milton7Weber. And that's, you know, where you can find all of his like, WrestleMania stuff. So.
Yeah, and you can find me over here on, of course, YouTube.com/StarRaptor, where I'm going to be posting. Well, I already did post my Living Force review. So there you go. I have my Living Force review posted there. I'm getting a quick update from him. No, his connection stopped. But, you know, at this point, let's see, is he still there? Oh, he's connecting, it's looking like. I'll try to vamp for a little bit longer while he's coming in here. But
well, all right, to bounce off your book cover title, or book cover.
There he is.
So on that book, it really did give me throwbacks to like a lot of like the Legends vibes from some of the old Legends books and things like you talked about. The funny thing is so this one's called The Living Force, you said, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the funny thing is, if you look, I'm pretty sure there's an Obi-Wan book in the Legends called The Rising Force, I think. So it's just it's cool that they see that there's like the Living Force, the Rising Force, like we're getting these like force-oriented books.
There you go. Yeah, it's all about the exploration of the Force. It doesn't have to be wars all the time. And that's what I really appreciate about this book is the idea that it's like really diving into the headspace of the Jedi Council about, hey, they're up there in their ivory towers, just like basically people think they're doing nothing to help the galaxy. Qui-Gon recommends them to say, okay, maybe we should actually go out. Like Qui-Gon literally tells them, save one person. Like that was his like whole mantra thing. It's just save one person that you're actually talking to. So then they go to this Quen planet, which has a lot going on because it used to be a shining jewel of the Republic. It was this big program to revitalize the economy. And since 200 years back, it's been kind of, the corporations are pulling out, more crime is happening there. So it's about the Jedi just going to this planet and basically helping out a bunch of people. And the pirates come and, you know, then there's a Star Wars action. So it's the book in a nutshell. But Milton, I believe we have you back. I don't know how much you heard about what I was saying, but I was basically teeing you up to say where they can find your WrestleMania coverage.
Yeah. I mean, look, man, they can find my WrestleMania coverage on my Instagram or my Facebook my Instagram and Facebook. My I don't really put myself on Twitter, but you can follow me on X at MiltonWeber7 or on Instagram at Milton7Weber, where you can see obviously my workout stuff, most recently my WrestleMania stuff. Check that out, WrestleMania 40 pop in, let's go. Your boy bought a world championship belt, as I told myself I would do. Fire. Just like we were talking before the show, it was a great experience. It's definitely something that if you're a super fan of wrestling, you should do, which obviously coincides if you're a super Star Wars fan, you know, going to a convention, whether it's a Star Wars celebration or like a Comic-Con or a mini local Comic-Con that celebrates that particular genre, do it. You know, if you have the financial means, do it. It's something that brings people together. So follow me on those platforms. I hope you guys have a good rest of the night.
Yeah, there you go. And you can find us both, or all of us here, back next week, same time, same place, 7 p.m. Eastern. We'll be reviewing the next Bad Batch episode, Into the Breach episode 13, and whatever Star Wars news we may get in the meantime. I don't know, man. We've gotten 3 trailer breakdowns in 3 weeks, so I would imagine that maybe Lucasfilm is cooling their jets a little bit on the news, but regardless of the fact, thank you guys for joining me. Thanks, everybody, for watching live. That's going to do it for Outer Rim Transmission, episode 148. For Milton, for Ben, for I, Chris, a.k.a. Star Raptor, thanks for watching, and may the Force be with you always, and Transmission.